this event 2NLB with the short wind and standard listeners. That's sorry for the delay. Had a long distance phone call for a long distance relative. And gee, isn't that what we're going to be talking about tonight? Is long distance receiving. Yes. Okay, the purpose of tonight's event, which is held every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. local time on the N2RW Link computer system, is to provide a general discussion forum for the different aspects of the radio monitoring hobby, and that means everything outside of the amateur radio band. All the different types of transmissions, from broadcasting to utility stations, public service, you name it, we're going to talk about it here. The basic ground rules for the net. The repeater information is listed at www.n2row.net. Please pick the repeater that's closest to where you are. This way you can ensure that you have the best possible signal into the system. But don't use too much power because you might trip a remote receiver and you'll sound noisy getting into that one. Also, because it is a link repeater system, when you key up, you pause for a second or two before you begin to speak. Otherwise, the beginning or the transmission will get cut off without fail. When you check in tonight on the air, please give your call sign, name, and location, and also indicate if you have any traffic for the net. And traffic, we're talking about any comments or questions or information that you want to share with everyone. Hopefully everybody got the email that was sent out regarding USL cards and logbooks, and you're ready to participate tonight. If you're not able to get into the repeaters for whatever reason, you may have some technical difficulties, you're too far away, or you're not licensed yet and you're listening on the scanner, you can still participate by sending an email to nyvsa@yahoo.com. So at this point, we're going to stand by for the check-ins. Please space it out. This way, make sure that everybody gets checked in and nobody's stepping on each other. This is N2NLB. Good evening. WHFQ, Bob in Elmwood Park. No traffic at the moment and no pending emails, but there will be listening.
A2GLW, Gordon in Manhattan, no traffic, and I will be heading out with the dog shortly, and I will be listening as I walk.
2NLB. W2LKZ, 10 in Frankfurt, no traffic. N7LB, KE31, no traffic.
Bob in Beaufort, Connecticut, with traffic unrelated to the topic for tonight, but that's okay. Sorry.
Okay, so far we have WA2FQQ, K2GLW, WA2OKZ, KE2UN, and N1MLZ. Anybody else?
WA2ZSK, IOS, New York. My name is Stan. Be listening.
For the topic tonight, but I do have a little bit of traffic for Bob MLZ, and I can do that with him after the net, possibly.
Okay, we also have W2ZSK and W2IWC. Anybody else before we start? Okay, and if you're trying to get in and you can't, please use our email address, which is nyvsa@yahoo.com. And that email account will be checked periodically throughout the evening. And if you have any comments or questions that you'd like to pass along to everyone else, we'll do it on the air. Okay, first up tonight, Bob, W2SQQ. I don't know how you want to approach this, Bob, but take it away. That's one of me.
I'll let you run it there. Maybe you can test the other traffic, and maybe we can just open it up as a kind of a general discussion. But I take it you got the document I created and got it out, so hopefully everyone on frequency had a chance to look at that and kind of get a feel for what we're going to be doing. I've just been tuning around the broadcast band here tonight, and it's interesting. I guess it was about 7 o'clock, and just listening to some stations, and within 5 minutes, the band just went long, so to speak. Station, I don't know, Connecticut or Virginia, and all of a sudden it was gone. So as the sun goes down and the time changes, it's very interesting what happens in that band.
W2CMA.
Next, back over to you, and we'll let people pass traffic, and then we can maybe kind of get a feel for what's going on here, and I'll also mention about my Kiwa loop antenna, which is kind of a neat way of listening to the broadcast band if you don't have the room for any large wire antennas.
Okay, Bob, we'll let you get some of those things squared away, and we'll touch back on it in a little while. Let's see. Yes, some other traffic that was not related to AM broadcast and dancing, so go ahead.
Okay, Charlie, when I know that, I think you called me, you were on right that time.
Yeah, no, I heard it coming back on another 32. Turning it over to you.
Charlie, very good, very good. Very short comment here. First of all, excellent QSL charge here. Bob has here. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Really, really, really cool stuff there. I read through them quickly. I just got the email a little while back. I got a little more detail, but very, very nice. Yeah, real quick, Charlie, I did verify the question I had last week about the 396 XT with the muting of the encrypted transmission and on a conventional channel, and it does mute the encryption on a conventional channel that radio does, and also the 99, the one you have, the 996, and also I guess the 396T also, the earlier model does, so Uniden did it right as far as that feature goes, where the DAE does not mute encrypted transmission on a conventional channel. It does, however, on a trunk system. So I got my answer. I also emailed GRE on the matter and asked them how come are they going to do that in the future? And I got a reply the next day, believe it or not, and some engineer replied to me and said, yes, their top priority is to have that feature in the future radios, but it's a hardware issue, not a firmware issue. So they would have to update the hardware, and it wouldn't be feasible to do that with the radios that are out there now. So I had my question answered there. It was possible to upgrade that feature. So that's it, Charlie, back to you. And one email, good.
Yeah, I caught your conversation with Paul about that.
Yeah, it sounds like GRE's got just the way that they're processing the audio seems to be their issue. They don't have a way of allowing it to turn off if it meets certain criteria, which is that's what it seems to me.
Yeah, I figured they would have definitely done it if they had a way to do it, but the way he was talking there wasn't worth the time, but hopefully this year, but I think I'll be getting my 396 XT. It's soon, so it's kind of annoying to hear the encryption all the time, so I think I might have two radios in the future.
Gee, the economy must be picking up with people buying extra radios.
Well, I thought the same thing, but I sold a few things, and I got rid of some old stock things that I wasn't using, so I was able to use that as an excuse.
Okay. Well, let us know how you make out with that. Like I said last week, I tend to concentrate on certain things only because I'm trying to do research and don't have too much time to go find these really esoteric things to try to verify things that are sent to me. So I can get them up on the website and the radio reference database. Yeah, sometimes I'll get something and if I can't verify it for a few weeks, I'm not going to put it up on the website immediately. Because what if it's wrong? I don't want to find myself in that position. But anyway, alright, good luck with that, Bob, and again, let us know how it turned out. Alright, Don, you said you had a question for Bob, WTIWC, and one of me.
subject Bob just brought up, the encrypted transmissions, and but I didn't get the whole gist of it last week. I didn't realize he was talking about conventional channels, because I know on the trunking system it does do that. But also, I believe if you do an import from radio reference, at least with the PSR edit software, you can tell it not to import encrypted groups. But I don't think that feature is available for conventional channels, even on the import, although I could be wrong. It depends on the system, actually. But I just thought I'd mention that. But apparently the answer from GRE tells a story, which is surprising because in a lot of ways that scanner does so much more automatically than the BC-996 does, and does it right, that it's surprising it wouldn't do that. But I don't, at least myself, I don't have that problem, so it doesn't bother me. Oh well. Thanks, Charlie. Back to Matt.
Okay, Don. Bob, did you want to reply to that?
Yeah, sure. Quickly. Thanks for the info there. The talk group does do that when you download it from radio reference. My big problem. Well, I guess it's a problem, but. My town actually encrypts, and they've been encrypting since day one. Probably the first country besides Japan to encrypt. But once in a while they go on the clear. So I'm hoping to leave a radio on. I'll have to listen to the encryption all the time to see. You know, once in a while, like I said, they're on the clear. So that's the big thing for me. And it's conventional, so that's the problem. But other than that, yeah, the radio is great. Unfortunately, they didn't add that to the collection. But thanks for the info, and we'll let Charlie we make out. Appreciate it. Back to that, and that was it.
The only thing I would say is you might want to double check that it's the same is true of the desktop model, because sometimes if you compare the 396 to the 996, you'll find that the 996 can do more because there's more hardware in the box. I tend to suspect with the GREs, they are 99% identical. I don't think they're 100%, but 99, which is a lot closer than the 396 versus 996. But it might be worth a follow-up to the engineer. All right, that's it. I'll be quiet now. Thank you, Charlie. And back to Matt. Thank you, Bob.
Okay, Don. No problem. All right. Let's see. Before we go into some of the nitty-gritties and basics and everything about the broadcast band, what's going on out there, let me stand by and see if we have any additional check-in. This way I don't have to break in the middle of all that. So any additional check-ins, late check-ins, whatever, please now. This is one of the shortwave and scanner listeners. Okay, Don.
November 2, Victor 3, red operating side with traffic.
To RW, Stan Allen, just pour into that.
Okay, moving to Greg into VQQ. Slight fluttering signal, Greg, and the audio is just a little low. And Richie heads to RW. We have you. Anybody else?
WQCMA, repeat, TL114H.
Okay, Greg, go with your traffic, and then we'll start doing the AM broadcast stuff.
Okay, here we go, Zero. Zero, let you know, we'll be in Queens, two HF receivers at Queens, which is still the ROW group in Baltimore. I was actually patiently waiting over there and actually begun the net over there thinking that no one else was on. And then I realized, let me switch over real quick just to see what happened. I missed the first 8 minutes of the net. Anything earth shattering good enough?
No, Greg, just a discussion on some of the idiosyncrasies between the GRE scanners and the unit ends as far as how it handles the encrypted APCO 25. And when I then wanted it to meet, and it turns out that the GRE says that they will do it in a future model because it's a hardware change rather than software.
Okay, understood. So it might be moving the weight because I'm considering upgrading to my C96 right now. Maybe out of the loop without the visibility to control that. And it's becoming important.
Well, the GREs don't do it now, but the unit ends do. So it's just a matter of, you know, which path you're taking as far as what model there is. You know, if it's GRE, then yeah, you have to wait for a newer model.
In the field assignment right now, as I usually am this time of day. And I'm just now coming underneath the Triborough Bridge right now.
Okay, you're sounding better now, believe it or not.
What repeater?
I don't know what to tell you. I'm heading northbound FDR Drive. That's where I'm at. I'm using a Kenwood radio, and on the screen it says N2ROW Manhattan repeater, actually it says LEARCN Michael from Manhattan. It's the UHF Manhattan repeater. I don't know the frequency. I don't know what the program is for this particular portable. Understood. All right, I am actually just passing underneath the Madison Avenue Bridge right now, still northbound on the FDR. Actually, at this point, it's the Harlem River.
Why don't you switch over to the Bronx?
Sir, I unfortunately don't have capability for that in this radio. It's not... Charlie understands what I mean.
Fair enough, but I hope I'll, since you're underneath the highway, it's sometimes easier to hit one of the Bronx machines if you have a clearing, but 100 also listens in the Bronx, so you can switch to the Brooklyn machine, but no problem. Can I carry on, Charlie? I'm sorry, into Arthur.
Graphic of repeaters are optimal in certain areas. amount of people struggling to figure it out. Anyway, that's a future project. Okay, so getting to tonight's topic, which is rare that we have a specific topic for this net, because, you know, ever since the beginning, this net has always been, you know, on the fly, whatever is going on, whatever's on people's minds. And in fact, the very first night that everybody got together on a particular repeater and talked about these things, Bob, you remember this, it was the night that U.S. Air Flight 550 fell off the runway at LaGuardia back in 1992. It was just something that happened, people got together, shared their information, and then just continued the process. So anyway, the reason why we brought this up is because of a question from last week. And hopefully everybody got the email that Bob sent out with a small sampling, and I mean small, of the different QSL cards he's collected over the years. Just to give you an idea, whenever you turn on the AM broadcast band, typically what you're hearing are stations within 50 miles of where you are. Yeah, the local stations. You know, the power burner stations, like 50,000 watts of WCBS and WABC and WOR, you know, all your local stations. During the daytime, there is not much of a signal that gets reflected off the ionosphere. In fact, most of the signal gets absorbed in the D layer of the ionosphere. And yeah, I know, those of you are starting to think back to your learning for your technician license, oh boy, I remember that. Yeah, the D layer during the daytime is absorbing the energy. So, the signal basically travels out ground wave, and then eventually reaches out. Yeah, think of the inverse square law. They double the distance, the actual energy you're receiving is 1/4, you know, inverted and squared. So anyway, during the nighttime, though, when the sun's energy is not hitting through the ionosphere all the way down to the ground, it starts to break up, and that layer that you're normally dealing with that absorbs the energy rises up, all the way up, it could be 70 miles up, and it becomes a reflective layer. That's why during the evening time, you'll find that signals travel better because they're bouncing off the ionosphere very high up in the giant mirror. And you wind up picking up stations that are several hundreds of miles away, sometimes even a couple of thousand miles away on the AM broadcast band. Now, in the history of radio, what we now know as the long wave band, below 500 kilohertz, and it moved up into the 500 to 1500 kilohertz. And when all the commercial interests jumped in there in the 1920s, and they all wanted to set up a radio station because they were going to sell advertising, well, the amateur radio operators were there too. You know, smart gap and Morse code and whatnot, and everybody was interfering with everyone else. So the brains said, oh, gee, why don't we take all the hams and shove them above 2 megahertz? That will get them out of the way of all the broadcast stations. Besides, those frequencies are useless. They don't go very far. Well, the hams fooled them by starting to talk to each other across different countries. So actually, the shortwaves were a lot better in that sense. But anyway, coming back to the AM broadcast band, signals travel further in the evening time because of that F layer, that very high layer of the ionosphere. Signals bound to go out. Now, when that happens, what the FCC did, or its predecessor, the Federal Radio Commission, decided that there was too much interference between the stations that were broadcasting. And they started setting aside certain frequencies to be regional in nature, and then you had the clear channels. Now, the stations that were given assignments on these clear channels were those like WCBS, WABC, and so forth. They were given enough power that they
we're able to handle a third or a half of the country in one shot. The regional stations, much smaller area like the northeast or the southeast or the intermountain region, and then you had all your local stations, which were designed for basically, you know, the New York City area, let's say. Well, as more and more stations wanted to get on the air, the FCC changed their rules about 10 years ago and started assigning low power stations the same frequencies the clear channels were using. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to hear some of these stations because the interference, that is somebody else on the same frequency, what they call co-channel interference. But with a little change in your procedure, sometimes you can pull out the signal that you want. And Bob will go over a couple things. Like he was talking about the Kiwa loop. A technique is to turn the loop in the direction of the station you want, and you null out everybody else. So Bob, you want to explain how that works? So you direct your cue, and to 108. Loop antennas have been around for a while, and if you do a search on the internet, there's all different designs you can build them yourself. But I actually have a company out in the state of Washington called Kiwa, K-I-W-A, that makes a really nice loop antenna. It's probably about 14, 15 inches in diameter, and it's actually one loop inside of another, so that you can rotate the loop in both axes. It's circular and then in vertical and horizontal, so you can null stations out. When you the nice thing about a loop antenna is that off of the ends of the loop there's a very, very sharp null with this drop second. So to give you an example, I'm about maybe 2 miles from WABC's transmitters, and they're pretty strong here. Now I can't null them out, but I can take them from 60 over 9 down to probably about 10 or 20 over 9, which is pretty substantial. You take stations like, say, WMCA on 570, and they're 10 over 9, and with that loop, I can null them out completely. They're gone. And some nights, there's a station out in Ohio, for example, that I can hear. So New York's gone, and, the weaker stations are gone, and can bring up the other stations. What sets the Kiwa loop out, it's also what's called a regenerative loop, so it has an amplifier and a tuned circuit. So what you can do is you can actually increase the gain of the loop and by actually using feedback, you can have a very, very sharp circuit. Actually tune the loop to within probably 20 or 30 kilohertz. So it becomes super directional. The problem is, though, that you start losing a little bit of audio quality, and it gets to be some very critical tuning. The ideal radio that you want for doing this is not necessarily an amateur transceiver or anything like that. Actually, if you have an old tube radio, one of the general coverage receivers, or you can still find the GE Super radios, which sell for about $49, and that's probably one of the best AM broadcast band DXing radios out there. It's an analog dial, super high gain, very directional loop stick antenna, and during the day have no problem at all listening to AM stations out, as far as Pittsburgh even. So it's a really, really good AM broadcast band receiver, especially if you live, 100 miles or more from the station. Most of the cards that I sent, I've got a whole binder and a box of them here. I just grabbed a few. But as you can see, most of those are actually back from the late 60s and early 70s. Which was when I was really into it. The other thing is that way back then, on Saturday night into Sunday or Sunday into Monday, stations in New York used to go off the air to do maintenance. And when they went off the air, that's when you could snag some of the
the more interesting ones. And not only that, but the interference, the actual noise level would really take a dip when the local 50 kilowatt stations were not on the air. Those are by no means the rare ones. Actually, there was one or two rare ones in there. There's a station I included, I think it was called Caribbean Christian Radio or something like that. They were supposed to be on 1020, and one night they were in there sitting on 1025, clear as a bell, because they were actually between two frequencies, and I didn't know what was going on. I sent them a letter, and I got it back, and if you look at it, you'll see the chief engineer kind of said they were experimenting that night, so they decided to go 5 KC up, and obviously got a lot of DX reports on there because they weren't competing with KDKA on 1020. The other one on there is a station called ZIZ, which I think was down in St. Kitts on 555. So our AM broadcast band is 770, 780, 790, and so on. But in other parts of the world, they're broken up into, in that case, like 555. And then in Europe, there's different splits. So if you're listening to an AM station in the United States and you happen to hear a heterodyne in there, that heterodyne more than likely is a foreign station that's a few KC below or above the station that you are trying to receive. That's where the loop antenna comes in. The other thing that I've done several years ago, I was down in Long Beach Island, and I think I've mentioned this a few times. I took, it was probably about 600 or 700 feet of wire, and actually put it right out on the beach and terminated it right into the salt water. Hooked that up to my Harlem receiver, and this was in November, by the way, so nobody was on the beach. Long Beach Island was a ghost town. But I actually logged quite a few European stations, Spain, Italy, France, and the one car that I included in there, CKEC, which is up in New Glasgow, Nova Scotia. They were like full scale. I just couldn't believe it. The interesting is you go in the car and you listen and you'll hear all these stations. You'll hear the heterodynes of these foreign stations. And you drive about a block or a block and a half away from the ocean and they're gone. So part of a lot of this transatlantic DX is literally conductivity of the salt water. I would love to be able to live on the ocean like that, but I don't. You could really, really do some incredible DX work if you live very close to the ocean. As far as the cards go, unfortunately, most stations today I don't think will QSL anymore. Unless maybe you write them a letter and you self-address stamped envelope. The last card I think I got was maybe in about 1998. WPAT went off the air, and I snagged it. I think it was WBEN or something like that. Exotic, but I got a letter from them. CBC, on the other hand, I actually, one of the CBC stations, it was in Moncton, New Brunswick. I sent them a letter, and I said, hey, if you got a QSL card or anything else, I'd appreciate it. 2 weeks later, I got an envelope. Got a refrigerated magnet, got a QSL card, got a brochure about their station, and I got a really neat CBC Moncton ski hat. A woolen ski hat, which I still have, actually. It was a pretty nice hat, so they like to hear it, you know, what's going on. As I say, though, most of the stations, I think today, because of budget cuts and because of the fact that a lot of the stations don't have a chief engineer anymore, you know, one engineer can actually serve for half a dozen stations. I don't think that anybody really acknowledges these. The small stations probably would, but the larger stations, I haven't tried it, but I doubt that they would verify it these days. Last thing that actually should be starting very soon, the National Radio Club, every month will schedule DX tests. And what they are, they're usually midnight to 2 a.m. A station will play a very distinct type of music, marching music or polka music, and they may actually do a CWID. And what they do is they will do this for maybe an hour, specifically to see how far they can be heard. And in those stations, they will usually QSL, so the National Radio Club sets up the schedule, and if you hear the station, you send them a report, and you can get a QSL card. So maybe starting next week or whatever, what we'll do is we'll include the schedules of the broadcast band DX stations that are holding these DX tests. If anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll turn it back to Charlie. It's WHOSQQ. Okay, Charlie, all yours.
Okay, Bob. Well, I'm going to go over a couple of technical things. One, Bob was talking about the loop. And that particular model has an additional feature over most loops is that it can be tilted up and down rather than just left and right. So it's all about the angles. Not all radio signals come straight at you from the east, west, north, and south. They come bouncing off the ionosphere, so it's good to have the ability to tilt it. The way that loops work is that their antenna pattern is a figure eight. So it's got good coverage in opposite ends of the compass heading, let's say north-south, but east-west, it sharply pulls into is almost nothing. So you can use that loop to either peak a signal, or by turning it 90 degrees, you can null it out very easily. So that's a physical way of dealing with the signal. On the radio, if you have two stations that are sharing the same frequency, sometimes one will have cleaner information on the upper sideband versus the lower sideband and vice versa. So switching back and forth, if you have that capability on your radio, the GE Super Radio does not, but any type of general communications receiver or an amateur transceiver that uses an AM broadcast band receiver will have the capability. If you do that, you can switch back and forth between the two sidebands to see which one is passing along the audio that you're trying to listen to. Both sidebands will not come in exactly the same way. Not only does the signal carrier fade in and out, but the individual sidebands fade in and out as well. Think of two saddlebags on a horse, and each one's got its own mind. It can do whatever it wants. They try to track each other, but sometimes they don't quite exactly. Bob was also talking about when you hear a heterodyne, a high-pitched whistle, which gives you an indication there's another carrier in there somewhere, but it's slightly off frequency. In Europe, they use 9 kilohertz to separate between the channels, where we use 10. So every time you go up another channel position, it'll go 1 kilohertz away, 2 kilohertz away, 3 kilohertz away, and then they'll match up again. Some radios, like the portable radios, the AT909, the TX-188 that I have, has a little switch on the side that you can tell the tuning computer in there that when you rotate the knob, make it 10 kilohertz steps or 9 kilohertz steps. So if you have that function, that is very easy, very handy. When you're hearing heterodynes, what you want to do is, again, go into sideband, upper or lower, doesn't matter, and slowly tune the knob until that high-pitched whistle drops its frequency, and all of a sudden you don't hear the whistle anymore. At that point, stop moving the dial and read what it says. And that'll tell you the exact frequency that carrier is on. You know, try it with local stations just to get a feel for it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Not exactly on the frequency they should be on, as in that Caribbean station that Bob found on 1025. You know, sometimes you'll find them a kilohertz or two away from where they should be. So, when you're putting in your logbook, put that in as well. Because sometimes it's intentional, as Bob found out, and sometimes it's not. And the station management, the station engineer, or whoever's doing the engineering for them, you know, would like to know that information. But of course, as far as you're concerned, it actually makes it easier for you to identify the station that you're trying to hear. If you go to my website, I have a link on there. If you go about half, two-thirds of the way down the page, I have a listing of different AM broadcast stations that I heard. Now, this list, of course, is a couple years old right now. I have to go back through it and update it and make sure that it's still the same. But I've indicated every channel position from 5:30 up to 17:10. What stations are heard here in New York? And I did this in the evening time, about 8-9 o'clock in the evening. So it's not like I was up at 3 in the morning. And I also indicate what type of station it is, whether it's a regional station or a clear channel station, and what the city and state it's from. So use this as a starting point. Now, you may find other stations on the same frequencies, especially when you get towards the upper edge of the band, you see all the L's in there, the local stations. You may hear others that I don't hear, based upon where you're located. I'm sure anyone MLZ up there in Connecticut is going to hear a bunch of local stations that you just can't hear down here in New York City. So, use that as your starting point and build your own list. Make it easier down the road when you're just tuning across the AM broadcast band. You've got a chart already made up for you, unique to your listening pulse, so you know who you're hearing. And then if you hear something different than what your paper says, then you start paying attention and you may pull out something really interesting. You know, who knows? Maybe that station that's in Philadelphia, let's say 1210 WPHC, happens to be off the air tonight, and all of a sudden you hear another station from somewhere in the western part of the country. You just make yourself a new catch. So, information can be very powerful. Also on the website, if you scroll down past that in the miscellaneous group, I've got links for things under the title of DXing Resources and Groups and MediaWave Broadcasting. Those two groups will give you a lot of information because they go to other websites. The Long Wave Club of America, IRCA, National Radio Club, the NEX Test information website is on there. Northeast Radio Watch. Scott Feibrich puts together a great running blog every week of all the different radio stations in the northeastern part of the country. So make use of the resources that are out there. And if you find any others that you think should be on the site, so this way we can share everything with everybody else. Let's see. Right, let me say, Mike, if there's any questions or comments, again, if you're not able to contribute on the air, please use that email address, and Bob will check it and relay your question or comment for you, nydxa@yahoo.com. All right, any comments or questions? And it's one of me.
CGLW?
GLW?
Okay. GLW first and then IWC. Good one.
I was running late tonight. I was just going to offer some thoughts on the way some stations arrange their antenna for directionality and why you can get them in some motels and why you can't, but maybe we can hold that over until next week.
Well, if you got some insight on that, why don't you present it here? No, go ahead. We have time.
For example, WABC, because there's a heavy concentration of New Yorkers down in Florida, particularly when they were carrying the Yankee games, would deliberately target their footprint so it would overlap down into Florida, and they could tell advertisers that not only were you getting the New York audience, but you were getting New York transplants down in Florida. The most interesting antenna that I know of was a station in Miami called WIOD. my affiliate in Miami, which stands for Wonderful Isle of Dreams, and their format at the beginning was dance music from the big Miami Beach hotels. This goes back to the 20s and 30s. Their antenna was 70,000 feet of wire suspended underwater in Biscayne Bay. I have some other thoughts, but it's running late, so I will cut it off at that.
Gee, and no unsightly tower. Wow, what a concept. And directionality can be used to either enhance a signal into an area or to prevent the signal from getting into an area. I believe WABC uses three towers that they feed in different phases so they can actually skew which direction the signal goes. 1190 had the same situation between the Indiana station we were talking about last week and WLIB here in New York, that for a while they had to try and skew the signal so they weren't overlap each other until WLIB's management decided to go by the Indiana station and then knock its power down. So there's different reasons why they do point the signal in different areas. If you're lucky sometimes, either on their website for the radio station, or if you're able to get a QSL card, like one that I got from CKLW, Windsor, Ontario, at 800 kilohertz, that single QSL card that I got in the mid-70s was silver, and it showed the actual footprint of their signal. But it didn't show it going all the way to the East Coast, so they were very happy to hear that we were picking up very soon. Okay, let's see, Don, you're the next one. It'll be a tie that we see, and one will be.
Okay, WHYWC. Well, two things. One, just a tip, Charlie. The Manhattan repeater has a lot shorter timer, or somewhat shorter timer than the rest of the repeaters on the system. So you have timed it out a couple of times, and I've reset it for you. But you might want to keep that in mind. And the other thing was, also in addition to using loop antennas for AM de-icing, there are some commercial units, and most of the units you'd buy you would have to build. But there are other ways to do it. I've had several loops over the years, and I also have what is called a phasing unit, and you can also get phasing units with regenerative preamps in them as well, where you put up two wires, and they don't have to be that long, but if you put up two antennas, best to do is one vertical and one horizontal, but it doesn't have to be either. And with the unit, you can change the phase angle between the two antennas, and let me tell you, it is amazing the feats that you can pull with those units that even with a good loop like a Kiwa, you couldn't begin to do. And will allow you to pull out amazing catches on frequencies you'd never dream you'd be able to have catches like that. So there's a lot of opportunity there to enjoy the AM broadcast band. It's really it's really a wonderful challenge because there's a lot there to be heard, but it's a lot, takes more work and it's more difficult to do it than I think, than it is on the amateur band. But if you make a good attempt at it, a lot of times you'll be rewarded very, very well. The other piece of news I happened to hear today on Twitter was that GE has come out with a new Super Radio to replace the Super Radio 3, which was one of the more disappointing ones in their line. And I guess it has a digital tuner now, but I haven't heard any more than that about it, so you guys might want to keep your ears to the ground. And I have a, GE Super Radio Tree here, as well as a CC Radio Plus from Bob Crane, the Sea Crane company, both of which are touted to be very good DX radios, and they are. They both have their shortcomings, some of which could have been avoided. But I'll tell you one thing, in Manhattan, neither one of them are great DX machines because the signals are so strong here from the locals that they both suffer somewhat from overload. And you really need a better receiver in this area, like the one I sold, the Drake R8, which did a terrific job. Anyway, that's it for me. Back to Net, Charlie, WA2IWC. Thank you.
Either that, Don, or a very tight pre-selector ahead of it. This way you only peak the frequency you're looking for and push down the rest of them. If you can, Don, if you have any links to information about the phasing equipment you were talking about, then I can pass it along to everybody else in the email.
You know, I don't, Charlie. It's been years since I bothered even looking, but I have some ideas, and if I can ever get more than 5 uninterrupted minutes, I will do some digging, and I may be able to come up with something for you, but I can't promise you.
Okay. Nice. As soon as I do see it, I'll pass along to everybody else. Every little bit of ammunition certainly counts. And I didn't know about the timeout differential between the machines. Don, I'll talk to Richie, see if we can get that balanced out.
Okay, well, just keep it in mind. If you drop it a little more often, it's not a terribly short timer, but it's not as long as the rest of them. So I've just been getting on there with no PL to reset it, which works fine.
Because I don't notice it. I listen to another repeater just to make sure I'm getting through the system. And I don't notice that this particular one's dropping out. All right. Let's see. WA2FQ, anything in the email before we wrap it up? And 1-0-B.
Nothing at all, Charlie. I'll be going through here and see if I can put something together for next week.
Yeah. Okay. And if anybody's got any other ideas or questions or whatever, you know, send them into the email and we'll share it with everyone else. And make use of the evenings. As they're getting longer and cooler, you have more and more opportunities to tune in these different things. Especially somebody who's brand new, just listening on the scanner, doesn't know much about radio. That is how you break into it. This is how you start learning. Bob and I, we were teenagers. Started with pocket radios and moved our way up. Who knows? Alright, with that we'll say 7-3 and we'll catch everybody later. And time to go update the broadcast bandwidth on my website. Catch you next week. And one will be.